Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
Sodomites, and welcome to the Sinister Sissies podcast, your guide to true crime, horror, and everything man on man and macabre. I'm Jared, your master of depravity, and I'm here with someone you haven't heard in a little while.
Back from the dead.
I'm very glad to welcome back. Paul Karp is back. That's very exciting.
Thanks for having me. I've rolled away the stone from the tomb, and I'm back.
And are you excited to be back, given the movie that I forced you to watch?
Oh, why are you assuming that I wouldn't have watched this without being forced? I mean, surely people shoveling shit into their mouth would be in my regular Friday night viewing.
Paul sent me a message. I'm assuming midway through you were watching this, just being like, Jared, this movie's fucked.
I waited until at least the halfway point just to tell whether I was being soft or not.
So today's episode is on Salo, or 120 Days of Sodom, a film by Pier Paolo Pasolini, an infamous film. It is on many a most disturbing films ever made list. Do you think it lives up to that name?
Well, yes, you know, serving up a banquet of shit where everyone has to eat shit, was up there.
The film is based on the novel or book by the Marquis de Sade, the famous debauch philosopher and aristocrat. I feel like I could maybe get away with doing a full episode on the Marquis de Sade just because his desires were so deviant. Maybe we can, like, you know, maybe he can be part of the community. It was based on his novel, 120 Days of Sodom, covering very similar themes. Pasolini chose to take the original source material and add political elements to it, in particular to bring about some political commentary to do with Italian fascism.
I'd be curious to ask your opinion of you know, the political subject matter, because the kind of fascist, the fact that they're fascists is pretty well explained from, you know, their costume and their own, you know, kind of moustache twirling evil, you know, talking about absolute power and, you know, tuning into Hitler and looking pretty satisfied with that. But I wanted to ask what you thought of, I mean, they just have kind of long tracts of political self-justification, you know, when they're sitting around, and what you thought of how they'd treated Nietzsche and other ideas I know you're interested in that they bring up while they're sitting around.
The kind of context of this, I think, is quite interesting, because Pasolini was, at a certain part of his life, quite sympathetic to Italian fascism. So he started off being quite sympathetic to it, and then moving away from fascist ideas, not quite getting to kind of socialist ideas. He was kind of critical of both progressive and fascinating man. Also a gay man, should mention that. That's why we're covering this movie, is because Pasolini is a gay man, or was a gay man.
Yeah, and most of the sex acts involve sodomy.
Yes, look, it's very much, I'll speak about that a little bit more, but it's very much, you can see his like homoerotic lens in a lot of it. But so it's interesting, you talk about kind of, you know, how do they treat the politics of this? Well, I think that one of the first things to note about is that, so the Marquis de Sade literature is 120 Days of Sodom. The reason that it's Salo, or 120 Days of Sodom, and takes place in the place of Salo, is because that is where Pasolini's brother was assassinated by the Italian fascist regime.
Ah.
So, you know, it is not a superficially political film. It is very... It's strange. I almost want to call this like a political satire, which is completely incorrect, because when you think of satire, you think of
it's like Animal funny. Farm, except with more fisting.
Yeah, because without any satire, there's usually like a wink or a nod or a, you know, it's something funny to it, but like that, it's like a straight faced, I don't know what you would call it, but there is a commentary, there is a political commentary happening here. The kind of brief plot is that a group of fascists round up 9 teenage boys and 9 teenage girls and subject them to 120 days of physical, mental, and sexual torture. Right off the bat, I do need to say that I love this film. And I don't, I'm not in, not in a being edgy or just being scandalous type way. I actually do think that it is a wonderfully made film. Not for everyone, though. Look, if you're not willing to watch violence, a lot of sexual violence, as in, I'd say, like, most of the film is rape and sexual assault, as well as some shit-eating and some gore that, I will say, some aspects of the gore even made me somewhat uncomfortable.
Industrial strength trigger warning. Let's do it.
So the film is divided into 4 segments, and they're based on Dante's Divine Comedy. The first segment that we have is called Anti-Inferno, or if I had an Italian accent, Anti-Inferno. How was that? Paul's face tells me that was bad. So we get our setup. It's 1944, and we're in the Republic of Salo, which is a fascist-occupied part of Italy. We get our 4 wealthy men established. We have the Duke, the Bishop, the Magistrate, and the President. So these wealthy men, they meet up. They agree to marry each other's daughters, which is what happens at the start. And then they make their daughters undress. And the daughters are actually, the 4 daughters are actually the 4 first members of this debauched thing that's going through. We then get scenes of them recruiting 4 teenage boys to act as guards, who are wearing the uniform of Italian fascist guards, just to, you know, get the theme on part. And then they recruit 4 other young men, known as the fuckers or the studs, and they're chosen just because they have large penises, and that's their role is to just basically fuck around. So we have like 8 young men. And this is what you were saying at some point about the fact that like it is skewed slightly towards the homoerotic angle, just because I think that there's a lot of like young male casting in all of this.
Well, and one of the first sex acts is one of the males having anal sex with one of the young females, and then one of the fascists like subbing himself in for the young female. I mean, do me. So it's like, you know,
yeah,
not that subtle.
Many things could be said about that. They then recruit their victims. So we have 9 young men and 9 young women. And we see as part of those scenes, I think one of the young girls' mother gets killed as they're trying to abduct her. So that's our first scene, Anti-Inferno. We then move on to the Circle of Manias, or Girone della Mania.
This is probably what the Spanish poet thought of my rendition of his poem. So like it all balances out.
Everyone meets at this huge palace. I don't know the background to this, who this belonged to. Like, can you imagine owning the mansion where all this depraved acts happened?
Stick that on the domain.com.au description.
I would go. If this is a hotel, I would definitely stay at this place. And the first, I guess, grotesque scene that we have, so everything's kind of explained to these victims that grotesque things are going to happen to them. We then have a breakfast scene where all the women are naked, and one of the studs or the fuckers bumps into one of the girls, starts raping the girls, and then the president displays his asshole and gets fucked by the stud. And during this segment, we also get a couple of things. We get our first monologue by Signora Vaccari.
Era un vecchio nobile conosciuto in tutta la zona per la sua depravazione. Il mio interesse, come potete ben capire, era enorme. Ma mia madre quella sera era più irremovibile del solito. Mi supplicava piangendo di non andare, di cambiare vita e...
E allora?
Non seppi resistere alla tentazione.
Often the way the torture starts is that they're sitting around in the drawing room and there are women in the crew of torturers who... you know, dress up extremely formally and very well made up and telling erotic stories from their youths as whores or, you know, exciting or violent or fetishistic encounters that they had when they were younger. And so there's an element of performance there in their retelling.
That particular component comes from the Marquis de Sade book. So the idea of getting prostitutes in... sex workers. I feel like in this particular case, prostitute probably describes them a bit better than sex workers. I don't know why. But getting sex workers in to entice people to be more depraved comes directly from the Marquis de Sade. Marquis de Sade, of course, is where we get the terms like sadism from. De Sade, sadism. And his whole thing... He was an avowed atheist and very much against any kind of religious norms. And so he kind of married this aristocratic sensibility with depravity taken to its furthest extent.
Yeah, I was going to say that the register of the language is very formal. The four men, the four fascists that are, you know, directing most of the gross traffic are introduced in the first scene as being, you know, like the president or mayor or judge, and so that they've all got titles, and they throughout the whole film they're still giving the formal third person singular instead of the second person singular to address everyone, and everyone is using their proper title as if they were at, you know, a dinner party.
It's during this segment that we have one of the most visually iconic scenes, which is all of the victims act like dogs. And so it's all these very young, naked bodies having to act like dogs. It's this, visually, it is, given the themes of kind of like fascist domination and all that sort of stuff, it's the most visually evocative demonstration.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We then move on to what I'm assuming is Paul's favorite segment, the Circle of Shit. Signora Maggi, or Maggi, M-A-G-G-I, who gives this like horrible story about her childhood and then talks about how much she loves shit. A lot of things happening there. Everyone's kind of, the president in particular is obsessed with shit and is like fondling things. Signora Maggi explains that she killed her mother because her mother didn't want her sleeping around or was making her sleeping around. There's this whole confusing point in that. One of the girls, because Signora Maggi is talking about her mother, one of the girls gets really, really upset.
She breaks down because she's the one whose mother died trying to protect her.
And the Duke, in response, decides to poop onto a plate and makes her eat the poop. And then they've discovered this new idea, and so then they all make them eat some poop. Highlight of the film.
And two young women are also consoling each other, being like, that this is the breaking point for one of them, that she's like, oh, she can't, oh, I can't do it. And her colleague says, oh, do it for the Madonna, you know.
I don't know how they did that. It's not actually shit, if that reassures you in any way. They mixed together, like, so there were like chocolatey things, but then they had like heaps of cinnamon and then like lemon and then like it was like really weird, sickly sweet flavors. So obviously it was edible for the actors to have, but it was kind of sickly as they were eating it. So
when you say it, what is the it if not?
No, it's like it's a weird mix of flavor, like as in like spices and chocolate and all these sorts
of things.
Okay,
but they didn't just like dust a turd in cinnamon and just like hoe in.
It was chocolate. It was like a
excellent, excellent. Yeah. Good. That's what I was driving at.
They have a weird most beautiful buttocks contest. Do you remember this
bit? I do remember this bit. Elasticity seemed to be elastic. It wasn't just a size thing. It wasn't just like who could like twerk the best. It seemed to be about elasticity. It seemed to be the quality they were going for.
This is where they get, because they were very like intellectual about it. Like there was a criteria and there was a discussion. The winner,
and it's actually the only thing that's democratic. It's the only thing that thing that's voted on. When they have a
by the fash. Yes.
When they disagree about the buttocks, there are two candidates, someone gets outvoted 3-1, and he's happy to go along with the majority though. So you know, democracy works as far as picking buttocks are concerned.
They end up choosing Franco, and Franco, frankly, wanted to die at this point, thinks he's going to get shot in the head, and then they're like, no, you're not going to die this way. And that's how that segment ends.
Well, we kill you over and over every day or something?
Yeah, I think there's a line about that.
It's very 1984, you know, stomping your face into eternity type, you know, you don't get off that easy, kiddo.
Yeah. And then we have our final segment, which is the Circle of Blood. Now, this segment actually starts with there's a weird wedding between so all the royal aristocrats, the bishop and the president and all that sort of stuff, get dressed up in female clothes. And then they get married to the studs or the fuckers. There's like a whole wedding, like a anti-wedding. I think they're wearing black or something. Like it's meant to be like a flip side of a traditional wedding. And they're upset that the victims are not happy with their wedding ceremonies. They tell jokes about them and all those sorts of things. At a certain point, the bishop leaves the celebrations and he wants to examine the current victims and speaks to Claudio. And then there is this series of events where they each tell on each other. So there's like Claudio, who's one of the victims, tells the bishop about Grazilla, about a photograph she has. Then Grazilla reveals about that there's two other victims that are having a sexual affair.
They're lesing out. It's two young women that are consoling each other in bed. Yeah.
And then ultimately all of this comes down to the revelation that Ezio, who is one of the guards, he's not one of the victims, is sleeping with a black servant girl who's on the premises. They discover them. What's that expression? In flagrante. What the hell is delicto?
In flagrante delicto.
God, that sounds more filthy than just saying fucking. So they're caught in the act, and interestingly, Ezio, when he's caught in the act and he's about to be killed, his lover is killed, and then he's about to be killed, he actually gives like a socialist salute. It was like an indication of socialism. That's what that big fist up in the air is. So he was obviously trying to work against them. As a result of Ezio being killed, one of the victims gets replaced and turned into a guard. We then have a screening ceremony where they decide which of the victims deserves to live. So, Grazilla is spared because she told on someone else. And Reno, who is a young boy that has a sexual relationship with the Duke and has been this like submissive little gay boy to him, he is also spared from being killed. All of the others are rounded up, and then they're taken outside one by one and are killed and tortured, mostly by the soldiers and the studs, but then some of the, like the president and some of the other ones come in. Amongst the many tortures that they have, the tongue gets cut off, there's some eye gouging, there's some
scalping.
Yeah, there's a scalping, there's boobs getting cut off, there's candles to the penis type burning off thing.
You also can't hear any of this because it's seen through the window, and you can just see people shrieking in pain and whatnot.
All of the libertines watch in voyeur. There has been a character that's been sitting in the background all this time, which is the person who plays the piano. And the pianist sees what's going on and then decides it's a bit too much for her. And she then jumps out the window to her death because she's so shocked about what happened. And then the final scene of the film is two young soldiers are left behind. And they decide to just have a little waltz together.
Yeah. I picked up on a few things at the end that were like, I think, trying to take you from the extreme violence to the message of everyone is all alike. That there's a joke that I think the Duke tells while they're watching the violence, where he says, what sound does the Bolshevik make when he jumps in the Red Sea? And the answer is splash. And I thought the point of the joke was everyone's alike. When everyone jumps in a body of water, they make a splash. Like the joke.
Sure, it's not. We should drown more Bolsheviks.
No, I think the joke is setting you up to think that the answer is going to be something specific to a Bolshevik. So you're thinking of, oh, what noise would a Bolshevik make? But the answer is splash, because everyone makes the same noise when they hit a body of water. It doesn't matter what their political philosophy is. And then I thought the dance scene at the end is also just kind of stunningly normal after a series of, you know, incredibly violent scenes. And, you know, one of them just asks the other about his girl, you know, what his girlfriend's called. And then they stick the radio on and they just have a little dance. And it's just like completely back to normality, because, you know, people can do horrible things and still be people, and don't think you're above it because, you know, everyone's the same.
There is definitely like a downer bent to the film. And I know you could argue that the whole film is meant to be depressing, but like earlier on, there is this like carnival of violence and carnival of horrors. And it loses that kind of carnival vibe at the end. The end is just like, and then this happens. And you're like forced to just be like, ooh, that's actually like pretty rough and pretty terrible. Does that make sense? Have I drunk too much beer?
Yeah, I mean, if you were enjoying the early scenes, I can see why it would have run out by the end of it. But I wasn't really enjoying the early scenes either. Okay. So I didn't find it. It was it was qualitatively worse.
And like, as in, I think that you could, if you were having drinks with friends, laugh at the earlier scenes, or at least find levity in the earlier scenes, particularly the shit eating.
And the buttock contest, I guess, the levity.
Like, that's what I mean. Like, there are these weird, and even like the dog thing, like it is ridiculous. But by that end scene, all of the ridiculousness is gone and you're left with this like muted, fucked up set of images, that I think is an interesting way to end the film. Cause I don't know, are we supposed to end this film feeling like shit? Are we supposed to be informed? Like, I kind of like that there is an ambiguity as to how we should feel at the end of this film.
Power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. The way they put it early on, where one of the fascists says evil is the most contagious disease. So I find that they kind of explained the themes quite early, and that is, especially in World War II kind of Holocaust type literature, I mean, it's such a well-explained theme that at the end of it, I didn't get much more than that out of it. It was more just collecting impressions of how Pasolini had conveyed that.
It's interesting that you viewed it as a really, like, obviously political film. But I think when I first saw this, and I would have been much younger, I think I just saw it as like a series of like fucked up events. And I had no like context of political ramifications. And so I wonder if most people, when they watch this, they necessarily actually even get the political commentary. Like it's aesthetically, like those images, even the really horrific images and torture images and stuff like that are, there is an artistry to that.
when something is so obviously repulsive, it's very hard to grade it on its aesthetics beyond, you know, the physical reaction that you have to it, which is that it was repulsive.
There's a solution to that though. Give it a rewatch.
Possibly. No, I don't think I would rewatch it, because I think I got the message the first time.
What about the aesthetic appreciation? What about the beautiful butts? The beautiful boy butts? You want to talk about this, like, not recorded?
I'm patting myself on the back for making it through once. That's good enough for me.
Thank you to Paul for joining the discussion. If you're interested in watching Saloa or 120 Days of Sodom and you want some company along the way, there is an audio commentary by me on the Sinister Sisters Patreon page, so check that out if you're interested in supporting the show. You can follow us on Twitter at Sinister Sissies, as well as at Facebook at Sinister Sissies. You can follow my personal Twitter at Jared Bartle, that's Jared with a Y. Or you can also follow our guest Paul_Karp on Twitter. Until next time, stay sinister.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.